Sometimes I'm in a cafeteria at 2 p.m. with five kids that are eating lunch and texting and didn't know that someone was hired to do comedy. And I always have to do an hour when I'm there. So I can't just do 20 minutes and leave. I have to get through the whole hour. So it can be tough sometimes, but usually I have fun with it.
Welcome to Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff, where we interview newsmakers, storytellers, and all-around interesting people. Sit back, relax, unless you're driving, and enjoy the show. Here's Jackson.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Jackson Huff. This is Not in a Huff. Thanks so much for joining me. As always, really appreciate it. This week, I'm speaking with another comedian. I'm speaking with Katie Kay. Katie is a really, really awesome person. She's based in Los Angeles. She's originally from Arkansas. We're going to talk about just her career. We're going to talk about what made her take that leap of faith, betting on herself and moving out to LA. We're going to talk about just what it's like, you know, life on the road as a comedian, how she structures jokes, you know, the circuit that is, you know, conferences and colleges. You know, every comedian kind of finds their way. I think that kind of early on in the process, a lot of people do the college tours and they do the, you know, things like that. You know, I was about to say they do the conferences, but I think that's something that many comedians do, even ones that are kind of tired of the club scene. I really appreciate Katie spending some time with me talking about just everything to do with what it takes to be a good comedian. I have listened to her quite a bit when it comes to Instagram reels and Facebook reels and TikToks. She's got some really, really great jokes. I really enjoy her style. Urge you to check her out there. She was on a Dry Bar special, so that's kind of where I got to know her at. She's a delight to speak with. Keeps it pretty real when it comes to just what it takes to get into the comedy world. You know, obviously, not everyone listening is wanting to be a comedian, but what you are wanting is just to hear some fascinating stories about somebody out there doing the thing, and Katie certainly is. So I did add a little bit of a kind of a lightning quick round of questions. I've done it once before. Still tweaking that. We'll see how that goes in the future. Definitely for the lighter interviews, I always like to add in something like that. We'll see with that. But yeah, I really enjoy speaking with Katie. Go follow along with her on Instagram, on TikTok, on all these type of places. Of course, follow along with this podcast on Instagram and on TikTok and jacksonhuff.com, jacksonhuff on Facebook, all that kind of stuff. Hope you enjoy this one. Here is Katie Kay. Katie, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for agreeing to join me. I'm going to let you do the heavy lifting. Just introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm Katie Kay. I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm based in Los Angeles, originally from Arkansas.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to unpack all that. And I told you before we started that, you know, I was going to tell you why I was a couple minutes late. I was 2 minutes late to this, and it's because that dang sign back here. I'm sure you're going to feel so sorry for me, but I've realized in 200 episodes, I only have two Ks. So you've used them both for the Katie and the K. Normally it says this week instead of today. So I don't know. You should feel special that the second time in 200 episodes, I've had to change this week to today to get that second K. And it's just one single letter, just Katie K. I didn't even have to write a whole last name. So,
well, thank you for jumping through hoops for me.
Well, it took me a whole extra 2 minutes, but I got you for sure. So let's talk about your comedy. Let's kind of start at the beginning. Where did that passion for comedy start?
I think the womb. I have like letters from my grandma when I was 3 years old saying that I reminded her of Carol Burnett. So I mean, which is high praise. I love Carol Burnett. And it was just like a sweet letter to find from my grandma. But yeah, I've always liked making people laugh and like performing for my family when I was a little kid. So yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you were younger, were you part of, you know, performances and stuff like that? Were you in theater and all that? Or was it more kind of
Well, your family.
Yeah, I was in dance, theater, like local productions, and then majored in theater in college. So yeah, in the theater department in high school, all of the above.
All of the above. And you mentioned that you moved to LA from Arkansas. Talk a little bit about that. Was there because of a different opportunity? Was it truly just betting on yourself when it comes to comedy, or what got you out to LA?
Yeah, I moved here 12 years ago, I guess now. And I originally applied to USC and I didn't get in the first time. So I went to University of Arkansas for 2 years, and then I applied a second time and I didn't find out if I got in yet. And I thought, I'm going to move to LA regardless. I'm moving either way. So I moved out, and then 2 months after I moved here, I got an acceptance letter. So I actually did get in. So for the last 2 years of college, I went to USC. And then during that time, I was working on acting and improv. And I started stand up a couple years after I graduated, not because I don't love acting still, but because I was getting kind of frustrated with like waiting for auditions or waiting to book a role. And I was like, well, stand up serves the purpose of like, I can write my own jokes, I can book my own shows, I can be more active. And so that's when I started stand up.
Yeah. And, you know, I talk to people from all walks of life, you know, but I guess kind of the theme a lot of times is that there was some kind of inflection point where they decided to bet on themselves and they took that leap, and that's what you did. So Arkansas is a whole heck of a lot different than Los Angeles. So how scary was that? And I mean, just, I guess advice for others on just taking that leap, because that's something you did and it's gotten you all the way here. You're talking to me, right?
Yeah. Right. It was definitely scary. It was definitely a culture shock. USC was way harder than U of A. And also just like surviving in the city, I had a couple jobs at a time while going to college full time. I worked at Jamba Juice. I was a dog walker. I was an assistant to a manager, an assistant to an agent. I was a million things under the sun, like the classic, you know, making it in LA hustle. So it's not for the faint of heart, but I do really love it and I would never go back.
Yeah. So is stand up, is that what you do, I guess, full time at this point?
It's like 70-30. I still have a day job for health insurance purposes. So I work in social media for my day job, which is super flexible and easy to do while I'm on the road doing shows.
Yeah. And you kind of just mentioned that you did a lot of things just to make ends meet. That's kind of the story of a lot of entertainers. But I've talked to a lot of comedians that are still working that full-time day job, and they've been some crazy jobs. And so I've talked to somebody who's a flight attendant, somebody who's a state trooper, another person who's a geologist. So a lot of people doing comedy with a lot of other stuff going on. I know what you're doing now, but what are some of the craziest things that you did to make things meet?
Oh, the craziest job I had. I can't believe this wasn't the first one I said. I was a landlord of 5 buildings in LA. So I started out, I was like, wait, this seems like a life hack to get quote unquote free rent. It's not free because it's at the cost of your soul and you're like doing a lot. But I became an apartment manager from an ad on Craigslist. Like I had no qualifications whatsoever, got the job, got moved into one building, and then quickly, like, I was doing a good job and they had other managers leave the company, and then they had empty buildings that they needed managed. So I ended up with 5 buildings at one point.
I'm sure that living in the building that didn't cause any kind of problems. You never had people kind of mixing up your work and your personal life, right?
Yeah, it was a nightmare, but I did it for 4 years and able to save a lot of money and buy a house in LA, which is really hard to do, but that's how I did it.
4 years and you just kind of forgot to mention that? Is that just blacked out of your mind? I'd expect you to be like, I did that for like 3 months, 4 years.
No, because it was, I also during that time was working as a server at a steakhouse and doing comedy and a landlord. So, like, I do think it's a trauma response that I just blocked out that like whole segment of my life.
I would say so. And I think some of the things that you do now, I was just checking out your reels before we started talking, and you do a lot of like college campus comedy. I want to, I guess, ask you a little bit about that. How does that happen? Is it just like, clubs, the colleges just book comedians? Is there like a circuit of people who specialize in that? Or tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's called NACA. It's National Association of College Activities, I think is what it stands for. But I have a college agent that specifically books me on like colleges and corporate gigs. So I just reached out via email to like 20 college agents, got responses from a few, got signed by one of them a few years ago. And then you showcase for like a bunch of colleges at once, so it's like a performance where you're showcasing for, a whole region of the country, and then they book you from that. And yeah, so I do a lot of college gigs. Some it's definitely it pays well. It's definitely a roller coaster of emotions depending on the school.
Do you have to like write an entire different set for colleges, or do you just go with your regular type things? I don't know whether everything I've seen your material is not, super dirty, so I don't think you necessarily
Yeah.
have to worry too much about that. But is it just the same stuff? Are they receptive to the same type of thing as a club would be?
Yes and no. So it's similar. I have had to repurpose stuff or like be a little cleaner, I guess. Like you said, I'm not really a raunchy comic, but at colleges sometimes they like it to be super PG, so not even swearing. But before I go, I always just ask them like, hey, is there any topics I should avoid? Do you want PG, PG-13 or R content? But luckily I have enough content that I can pivot depending on what they like.
How deep do you get into this, Katie? Are you able to make jokes when you get there? You're like, oh, Dyson Hall, isn't that a mess? Do you actually do your research, or you just go in, come in, get in and get out?
I at least know, like, I ask the school reps that are emailing back and forth, like, and I do my research on what is their school mascot or is there anything going on? Is it like orientation week? Am I talking to only freshmen? Am I talking to, sororities and fraternities? Like, I at least know who's in the crowd so I can kind of pivot to what they want to talk about. So, yeah, a little bit.
I mean, I'm not in stand-up comedy, period. So I really have no idea. But in my mind, I would think you've got to be a really good stand-up comedian to be able to do these colleges, because the difference with clubs is they've starting to get some liquor in them, and the more they drink, the funnier normally that person is on stage. So them to be sitting in like an auditorium drinking nothing, you've got to really be on the top of your game, I feel like.
Yeah, it can be interesting because, yeah, ideally I'm in a theater on their campus on a stage with 100 kids. That's great. Sometimes I'm in a cafeteria at 2 p.m. with 5 kids that are eating lunch and texting and didn't know that someone was hired to do comedy. And I always have to do an hour when I'm there. So I can't just do 20 minutes and leave. I have to get through the whole hour. So it can be tough sometimes, but usually I have fun with it.
So do you is I mean, I wasn't necessarily going to ask you this question because obviously you kind of excelled at it, but if you had to pick, do you prefer the college world, or do you prefer the club world, or they both just have their pluses and minuses? I'll
Oh,
let
yeah.
you veer that way if you want.
Yeah, no, I really like doing clubs, because I think when you buy a ticket to something, you're like really invested in having a good night. And also, obviously, yeah, the food, the drinks, the atmosphere, the stage, the lighting, like there's something so much nicer about just like a proper comedy club. But I'm at the point in my career where like the corporate money from colleges and stuff is really helpful. So, and I do think it makes you stronger as a comic. So it's not easy, but I do think it makes those club gigs just feel so easy once I've done like the colleges that are kind of an uphill battle.
Feel like that would be the time, you know, you're in the auditorium, you're in the lunchroom, people are eating their lunch. There's where you can probably try out some of those jokes and see if they giggle in between bites of sandwiches, then maybe that's a good one. Maybe I can use it somewhere else, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like an open mic energy.
Yeah. So I want to kind of pivot now to, there's so many people out there that are funny, but that doesn't mean that they're going to be good at comedy. So what do you think makes people actually good at creating stand-up comedy? Because there's a huge difference. We've seen a lot of actors and maybe more importantly, currently a lot of, you know, social media influencers that are create funny TikToks, and then they try to go out and be stand-up comedians and it doesn't always go so well.
Yeah, it's tough because there's definitely, if you blow up on TikTok before you have like the jokes to back it up, I'm sure that is like a whole like challenge in itself. But for me, I think it's just having timing, like comedic timing and like a gut instinct for what's funny and like reading the room, because there's sometimes that I'll think a joke is so funny, and then if I say it at two different shows and it's just kind of falling flat, I'm like, okay, maybe it's only funny to me. Never mind. Like some people I think don't read the room and they just think they just keep telling that joke and it keeps bombing. And it's like, just be humble enough to accept that maybe your idea isn't funny. So I think it's like innate timing, reading the room, being self-aware and being humble.
Yeah. And I mean, I've talked to other comedians and they look at it a little bit differently. And it sounds like there's two different pathways. It's what you just said, that, hey, this joke is not working. It's time to scrap it and be done with it. And then there's other people that are like, I'm going to figure out how to make this funny. Eventually, I just need to continue working on it. So it sounds like you're not somebody who's married to a joke until you craft it into a laugh.
Yeah, I mean, sure that you can rework it, but I think it's all about being relatable. And if a topic that's like super niche to you isn't relatable to a wide audience, then no matter how much you craft it, it may not hit with a lot of people. So I don't know. It's like a fine line.
Yeah. So how do you come up with your jokes? Are you kind of somebody who looks at the world as a whole and finds funny things in it? Do you just kind of create fantasies in your mind, or how are jokes crafted for KDK?
Yeah, fortunately or unfortunately, they're all just like true stories from my life. So I'm not really a political comic. I'm not really like just an observational comic. I mean, some of it is, but mostly it's just like things that have happened to me in story form and added punchlines.
Yeah. So do you, I mean, surely you embellish some of it. Hopefully, I've listened to some of your jokes, and hopefully you haven't had that bad of a wedding experience. And hopefully the BMV is really not that mean to you.
Oh, no, it's all completely true. I do not lie or embellish. The
really?
Only thing I've done is change the name of someone I'm talking about from my life. Like I've been like, oh, this joke about my mother-in-law is actually my best friend from college. Like, so that I don't get in trouble with my family.
Okay. What does your family think of all of it? Obviously you've been doing it for a good long time, and you, like I said, you bet on yourself a long time ago and moved out to LA. So how do they feel about all of it? Because you do kind of do tell jokes about family. It sounds like you maybe change things up enough to not get in trouble, but how do they feel about all of it? Definitely if you're talking about them.
Yeah. My mom is super supportive, and most of my like extended family and brother and stuff. My dad is not supportive, but we haven't talked in like 13 years. So that's okay.
I feel like that may be a common theme with comics. They've always got some family member that maybe has left the station, right?
Right. That's, yeah, that's totally fine.
Yeah. I want to ask you now about, because it seems like all comedians that I talk to, they have maybe a joke or a bit that they're best known for, or if they don't have one, they have one that, man, they wish that it could be there. It could be their signature bit. Do you have something that people kind of know you by at this point?
I think that my most like requested joke and the one that's gone viral, I suppose. Sadly, it went viral on someone else's page, but it is the one that I talk about. My friend got a staph infection from a old rusty razor that was 10 years old. That joke.
Sounds hilarious.
Yeah.
No, I hear you. So I guess I want to kind of move into kind of a game if we can. I can see you, and it sounds like you're pretty well set up. So this isn't really going to be all that fun of a game. I'm used to people who don't think they're necessarily going to be on camera, but you know, in the world of Zoom now, you know, people can join me in all worlds. So here's kind of a list of questions. You can answer them, or you can pass as well. Nothing's too crazy, so I shouldn't worry about it. But are you talking to me on a computer? Are you talking to me on your phone? How are we talking right now?
Computer.
And you're sitting in a chair, so I assume that, are you kind of sitting at a desk? I always like to kind of just set the stage for people who can't see. Are you sitting at a desk, or are you propped up on, you know, six boxes, or where are we at?
I'm sitting at my kitchen table.
All right. Any animals there that haven't made the 15 minutes of fame?
Yes. One right next to me, in fact. Do you want to see him?
Sure.
Is it
a chihuahua, or what is it?
He's a miniature pincher.
Oh, he is a miniature pincher. It's a trimmer little thing.
Yes. All he does is shake. He worries. We both have a lot of anxiety.
Well, there you go. Well, I don't want to make him any more anxious. He can go on his own now. You know, obviously this is a very professional interview, so I never ask the question, do people wearing pants to the interview? But so I'm gonna make it easier and say, did you wear shoes and did you wear socks to the interview? Did you come to us in a professional manner?
I am barefoot, but I do have pants on.
Well, you didn't have
but
pants.
But I'm in
the
my
pants,
house. I don't wear shoes in my house. Do you?
I do. Definitely, given that that's a question, everyone always asks me that. So I always put shoes on for the interview. We've got to feel professional, right?
Okay.
All right. Your house looks immaculate right now. So again, this is an awful question for you, but if you had to turn the camera around 360, is the room you're in, is it embarrassing at all?
No, unfortunately.
Unfortunately? I feel like that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think, but it's not interesting. It's just a boring, tidy kitchen.
So this, I'm telling you, this game normally is because I talk to people who are like laying on their bed with like a million things going on or all kinds of stuff. You're prepared. So that's like one of the lamest versions that I've ever had. But you know what? It's good for you, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
So I want to ask you now about your own podcast. I've checked out a few episodes. I assume he's in a lot of your videos. I assume that may be your husband or somebody that you like fondly, I guess.
Yes, it's my husband, Cameron.
Yeah. Tell us about the podcast.
Yeah, it's called Mostly True Opinions, and we have been doing it every single Monday for 7 years. Ooh. So we have a lot of episodes if you want to binge something. And it's fun. It's full of exactly what it sounds like, our mostly true opinions. And yeah, it's silly and goofy. And we always end with a segment called the Judge Judy Moment of the Week, where I rage about a small injustice that has happened this week.
And is it always just the two of you? Do you ever have people on?
Yeah, it's usually just us. We've like a couple times had a guest on. We had like a couple from Love Island once, and we had like my friend or Cameron's parents on. But in the 7 years, we've probably only done like 4 episodes with a guest.
Yeah, I feel like that's doing the kind of podcast that you guys do. It seems so much harder because I mean, I talk to other people with podcasts and I talk to other people, you know, in my own life, and they're always like, oh, it sounds so hard to have to get a guest every week. But actually, that's easy. I just have to ask questions and listen to people. But to every week have to come up with material and things to do. How have you been doing that for 7 years? I've been doing this for 4 years, and I feel like even I run out of questions sometimes.
Yeah, it can be kind of tough. But now we're just in such a flow. Like both of us have a note in our phone. So through the week when we're you know, in between episodes, we just think of things as they happen and write them down to remember to talk about it on the podcast, or we source like games or ideas from trends on social media, like on TikTok or Instagram. So whatever's trending, we'll like try to adapt it to what we talk about. So, yeah.
Yeah. What is, I assume he's not a stand-up comedian. He talks, and I haven't listened to all the episodes, so maybe you talk about every episode and I haven't heard, but what does he do? Because he talks about his day job a lot more than you do.
Yeah, he works for Amazon Music and the Zach Sang Show. And before that, he worked in live radio. So he has like an entertainment background, but not in stand-up with me at the same time. So it's kind of nice that he gets it, but it's not exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to ask you too. Let's go back to stand-up. And I want to ask you about, you know, we talked about how college shows are a little bit different. Sometimes they're not as receptive. Sometimes you've got these strange worlds. That happens in clubs as well. And sometimes you just maybe don't connect, or people just like to be mean online. You get trolls and all kinds of stuff. Anytime you put yourself out there, you're going to get trolls sometimes, or you're going to get people that don't like what you're doing. How do you, I guess, you deal with that? Definitely when you know, it's something that you've spent time crafting, something you feel is funny, and then people just rag on you. How do you deal with that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it just helps to develop such a thick skin, because especially now with putting stand-up on social media, like in the past few years, if you don't post clips, you're totally screwed. So it's just kind of developing a thick skin of knowing that there's always going to be the trolls in the comments that say like women aren't funny, or people that are like quit comedy. Like I've had people be like, you should kill yourself. I'm like, wow, thanks, keyboard warriors. So I think it's just about blocking out the noise and continuing to like plod forward despite all of the sad sacks in the world that comment mean things.
So do you just try to ignore them? Do you try to personify it? I mean, I've talked to people that's like, I just can't give it oxygen, that, you know, it's, yeah. I just ignore it. And then there's people that's like, I feel like a lot of times they just don't realize that this is a real person on the other side with real feelings too. And then they, you know, they feel like they've got to talk back, which is sometimes good and sometimes not.
Yeah, I would say 90% of the time I ignore it, because there's no use in arguing logic with an insane person. And it, like, the type of person that's going to write that isn't someone I care about gaining their respect back. So there's that. But then 10% of the time, if I have like a really funny response, like that comes to me, I can't help myself. So I'll put it, or like a little retort just for me. Like I won't go back and forth a bunch of times. I'll just do one and then be like, ugh, or I'll block them. If it's something like the, you should kill yourself people, I'll block them. Because that's ridiculous. And then sometimes like there's only been like a couple times where I'll do like a video response about something, but I won't go back and forth. It's just one statement and then I'm done.
Yeah. You don't feel the need to explain yourself of why women should be allowed in comedy?
Yeah. No, yeah. I don't need to do a TED talk. We're good.
Yeah. I don't always understand that, but the world of comedy is kind of interesting one, because I don't know, and you're in it, so maybe I'm wrong, but I almost feel like sometimes any kind of attention sometimes is better than no attention. So I sometimes, you know, when people are harping on people, it seems like sometimes comedians are able to find a way to kind of jump on top of that and actually excel from it. So I don't always think it's a bad thing.
Yeah, honestly, the people commenting shit, I'm like, well, you're engaging in my post, which is boosting me in the algorithm and then therefore showing my comedy to more people. So like, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Tell us about the way that I found you was, what was it? Now I'm going to forget. It wasn't Raw Bar. What's the one that you were on? I'm so good at this research. Bar. Dry. I was on Dry. I was right. I said Raw Bar, but Dry Bar. How did you, I guess, get a show on that?
Yeah, so it's something I wanted for a few years, and I finally figured out, you know, how to get in contact with the booker and what he needed to see from me in order to consider me for like being part of the next season of Dry Bar Specials. And I emailed for a few years, like every 6 months, I would submit a tape and my credits and referrals and all these materials. And then finally it just worked out and he let me know that I booked it and I could record a special with them. So the end of September of last year is when I recorded it. And then it came out a few months ago now. So it was about a 7 month turnaround from when I shot it to when it was released. And yeah, it's doing well.
I called it Raw Bar instead of Dry Bar. I feel like that may be a very different world for something called Raw Bar. But
yeah.
What goes into that kind of preparation? Did you just simply kind of tweak the jokes that you already had and do your best ones? Did you write an entire new special, or what'd that look like?
It was kind of a mix of old and new. So I had recorded a comedy album earlier that year in January, and I did use a few jokes from that and then a few new jokes combined, because it's in Provo, Utah, and the majority of the audience in Provo is Mormon, and the production company is Mormon. So they have a really strict policy on material and being squeaky clean. So it was like a little bit of a challenge just to make sure that everything flowed together throughout the special and was squeaky clean, and like adjusting some wording. Because I have a joke that's clean, but I say the word tits in it, and obviously that's not like squeaky clean. So I changed it to cleavage for the show, like for the special. So yeah, just like little things like that. But for the most part, it wasn't super hard. And I was really like just really pleasantly surprised with how well received I was with the Mormon community. Cause I've never, like, before that, I had never experienced like a fully Mormon audience before. So I was kind of nervous about how it would go, but it was really fun.
Well, we've talked to quite a few people in the world of Mormonism on this podcast before, and in a very different vein than we're going down here. But yeah, it's an interesting community for sure. Yeah. My favorite kind of bit that you had, just so you don't think I closed my eyes and picked you to talk to, I did listen to your comedy, and I like you talking about how somebody complimenting you on your unique features. I think they talked about your nose. I thought that was good.
Thank you. That. Yeah, that's a fun one.
It is for sure. So let's talk about kind of just wrapping up. What do you hope the future holds for you? That's a tough question, but what do you hope, you know, you're doing in 5 years?
Yeah, I hope I'm touring. I do headline a lot, so I just want to keep doing that, but with bigger venues. And I hope I'm writing for a TV show. Like, that would be a great side gig to also stand up. Or like SNL cast member. That's always on the vision board.
That'd be all right. So tell us kind of how people can connect with you. I don't know your reel was just had you, I think, and I don't know where you, I think you're on the East Coast, so you're all over the place. So you're not just, you know, West Coast based. So how can people find you? How can they see if they're coming to a club near them, and anything else that you want to promote that podcast too?
Yeah, you can listen to our podcast, Mostly True Opinions, on any streaming platform where you find a podcast, and follow me on all social accounts at KDK Comedy. And I post all of my like tour dates on my Instagram.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Yeah, this was fun.
So that was Katie K. Really enjoyed our chat. I urge you to check her out. She's got some really great jokes out there. Of course, we can't really go into those deeply in our podcast. Anytime I talk to comedians, I'm like, I want to talk about the joke, but I don't want to ruin their next special. So I urge you to check out Katie K. I urge you to check out all the things she's got going on social media. Since we last spoke, I've realized that she's kind of big in reality television and kind of does wrap-ups of all kinds of shows. I think Big Brother's a big one for her. Yeah, it was a great chat. Like I said in the beginning, I'm still kind of tweaking that lightning round. I'm trying to let you in on, most of you guys don't see any video of the podcast, so to kind of see the surroundings of the person that I'm speaking with. You know, sometimes they are, you know, sitting Indian style on their bed while six cats are all around them. This time, a little more boring for the conversation, the questions, because she was, you know, sitting at a desk in an immaculate house, so nothing crazy there. But I appreciate her being a good sport and indulging me on those questions. But yeah, really, really awesome conversation. Go check her out. If this is your first time listening to this podcast, go follow along on Instagram, Not Enough Podcast, on TikTok, Not Enough Podcast, jacksnap.com, Not Enough with Jacksnap on Facebook, all kinds of places. Go leave that 5-star rating on Apple and on Spotify. Leave a written review on Apple. Really helps. Go check out Katie K's podcast too, the one that she does with her husband. I know you'll enjoy that one as well. But if you do nothing else, catch you next week. Take it away, Chris.
This has been Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff. Thank you for listening. Be sure to join us next time where we will interview another amazing guest who is sure to make you laugh or make you think, or hey, maybe even both. But until then, keep being awesome.